possible in part by a grant from Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm with two toll-free lines. In Illinois, 800-252-2013. In Indiana, 800-637-3123, or email to Cooley at admworld.com.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report for Monday, June the 5th, 2006. I'm Jay Pierce, sitting in for Dave Dickey, who would be sitting in for Todd Gleason, of course. Todd will be back later this week. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing in Normal, Illinois. And later this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. In agricultural news today, USDA says Japan's prime minister may announce an end to that nation's ban on U.S. beef during a Washington, D.C. visit later this month. Also, the National Resources Conservation Service has a new strategic plan. We'll find out about it. AM 580 Ag Director Dave Dickey will have these and other stories later in the half hour. And Todd Gleason will report on attempts to open new markets for soybeans. It's all coming up on the Monday edition of your Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM 580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com.
Well, on the close on the Chicago Board of Trade, July wheat at 495.5 was up 1.25. Make that the Kansas City July wheat was up 1.25. On the Board of Trade in Chicago, July wheat was down 5.25 at 398.5. September at 414.25, down 3.25. July corn 253 was down 6.5. September at 264.75, down 6.25. December also down 6.25 at 278.75. March at 290, down 5. July soybeans 603.25, down 5.75. August at 610, down 4.75. September 616, down 5. And November soybeans at 629 were down 4.25. The July soybean meal 183.90, down 150. And July oil 25.30, down 13. August feeder cattle 109.57.5, down 65. June live cattle 80.17.5, down 15. The June lean hogs finished up 72.5 at 70.12.5. And joining us now to take a look at the futures market, Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing in Normal. Good afternoon, Kurt.
Good afternoon, Jay.
Well, a lot of people had said after the surge on Friday, the prices had to come down. They did. I suppose that's one factor, but are there some others out there?
Well, we're keeping a close eye on the weather forecast. As we all well know, weather will make the market go up and down here quite actively here as we get into the growing season, which is now until end of August. And so far, the near-term weather forecast for a whole is favorable. For those dry areas throughout the Midwest here, we're going to have a chance of some moisture here over time. Seems like every 3 to 5 days there's some type of frontal system coming through. So the weathermen are going to be quite popular from here on out. Also, too, some areas that might have been a little wet, we've enjoyed some warmer, drier weather to help them out. So fundamentally, from the weather point of view, it might be a little negative, the idea that we're going to have favorable conditions. The crop progress or conditions reports expected to show corn conditions 70% good to excellent, which is, you know, favorable towards a 155 bushel yield as a nation. And we're going to have our first bean estimate out here this afternoon, and we're going to expect this bean rating to come in 64 to 68% good to excellent. So as a whole here, until we get into some adverse weather situations or see some problems in the crop, you got to sort of look at maybe rallies in here. It'll be limited due conditions. But the bottom influence is going to be the funds. You know, they're going to push this market around, and they were sellers today. They sold about 2,000 contracts of wheat, about 8,000 contracts in corn. One firm came in late in the session there and sold about 25,000 contracts of corn in the July futures there in the close, and that's why corn sort of took a hit late in the day, and they were sellers about 3,000 contracts of beans. So I think it's going to be a battle between the funds and the weathermen here as we get into June and July, Jay.
All right, so what do I do if I'm sitting here wondering what my strategies might be?
Well, as a producer, and there's two types of markets and two ways to look at it. You got to look at one or the other. But as a farmer producer, you got to use the strength to sell into it. You know, these are very good prices to compare to where we were about 6 to 8 months ago. 6 to 8 months ago, producers were given anything to be at these price levels, and here we are. So I think you got to scale into it and stick to a marketing plan and take advantage of these higher prices. The other thing you can do is, if you want to lock in something but leave your upside open, is I'd come in and just buy 100% protection with put options. You know, put a floor under you, and that way if the market rolls over here on favorable weather and big production prospects, you're covered. If they get in a drought situation or a rust situation where the market takes off, you're just committed to that put, and you don't have to worry about margin calls or selling your cash grain too early. I think that's just an excellent money management strategy as a producer. Buy the puts and actually hope they're wrong. The other side of the equation, if you're a commodity trader, investor, and you want to make a lot of money, lose a lot of money, I think there's going to be plenty of opportunity here because this market is going to be straight up, straight down. It's going to get extremely volatile as we get more into the middle part of summer in here. And in that case, you got to go with the trend and decide when to get in and when to get out.
Mm-hmm. What are you expecting on tomorrow's open then?
Well, we'll see what this afternoon's conditions report shows. See if we actually see a little bit of improvement in the corn conditions and see if the bean conditions come into there. We'll see if beans are actually 94% in the ground or not. By all means, the way it closed in through here will probably have a little follow through to the downside, I would think. The thing is, on Tuesdays is contrary Tuesday or turnaround Tuesday, so we can maybe see a lower open and a higher close. So we'll have to monitor the news overnight here and watch these outside markets to see if they try the upside one more time or not.
Yeah, and I guess those numbers are going to come out about 3 this afternoon for those looking at Central Time. Anything else you want to touch on outside markets? I noticed gold, silver up, the oil up. Dow was down today.
Yeah, the Dow was down. More worries or concerns about inflation. I mean, we've always had inflation. I don't know why everybody's worried about it all of a sudden, but some of the indicators are indicating that maybe the Dow could cool down here for a little while. Some money coming out of stocks into the commodity market, per se. We'll keep an eye on that. But the main thing is the outside, such as the energies and metals, that's where most of the spotlight is. One thing to watch, though, as we go into Wednesday here, where we talk about these commodity funds, and one of the funds is the Goldman Sachs. What they'll do is, starting here on Wednesday, they'll start their rolling in the July contracts on out to the deferred. So they've been long the Julys. They could be a seller of the Julys and buyers to the deferred. So I think that's the play to watch here if you're a spread trader here as we go through this week.
All right, Kurt, thank you much.
Very good.
Have yourself a good day.
Appreciate it.
It's Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing in Normal, Illinois, who joins us every Monday during the closing market report and, of course, Monday mornings during the opening market report. Goldman Sachs commodities 481.53 down 0.61. Gold for June, by the way, closed up 770 at 643.20, and silver for June 12.24. That was up 21 cents, and the Dow Jones Industrial Average 11,073 right now, down 174 points. Dollar at 84.14, that's up 0.10. CRB index down 116 at 348.89. And crude oil, 72.65 on the July contract, and that's up 42 cents a barrel. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, we'll talk with the folks at Chesapeake Energy in Chicago for a look at agricultural weather. AM 580's meteorologist Ed Kieser is forecasting western Illinois to see increasing cloudiness tonight, scattered showers and thunderstorms possible after midnight. Elsewhere, clear to partly cloudy, lows ranging from 53 in eastern Indiana to 63 in west central Illinois. Tomorrow in western Illinois, mostly cloudy, scattered showers and thunderstorms. In eastern Illinois, increasing cloudiness with scattered showers and thunderstorms arriving during the afternoon. In Indiana, mostly sunny, highs ranging from 77 near Lake Michigan to 84 in the south.
In agricultural news, USDA Radio Newsline is reporting U.S. Ag Secretary Mike Johanns is saying it's possible Japan's prime minister may announce an end to his country's ban on U.S. beef when he visits President Bush later this month. And if that happens, Johanns says 2,000 tons of U.S. beef quarantined when Japan reimposed its ban on January 20th should be the first to re-enter the Japanese market.
The beef that is there is safe. We had one shipment that did not comply, but the other shipments did comply. They satisfied all the requirements of our agreement with Japan, and it is certainly our hope that when we resolve this, they will allow that beef to be sold. There isn't any reason why it shouldn't be.
Japan has said previously it will not formally lift its import ban until it has completed a series of public hearings. They wrap up on June 14th. Meanwhile, Johanns says it's possible South Korea's market may reopen to U.S. beef as soon as June 7th. Still, there remains at least one contentious issue. South Korea wants to pick and choose which U.S. plants it will deal with, shutting out plants that have a history of shipping beef containing illegal bone fragments. National Agricultural Statistics Service is currently in the field gathering data from producers for the June 30th acreage report. Bob Bass is head of the NAS Census and Survey Division.
Our acreage planted and grain storage, about 73,000 on the national level. And for our swine survey, hogs and pigs, slightly over 10,000. And we use areas of land to get a more localized indication of acreage planted, and that could be as many as 40,000 farm operators.
Bass says getting accurate information from all those ag producers is what makes the reports critical planning tools for ag producers themselves.
It's not the actual report that impacts the price. It's a clear understanding the actual quantity that enters the market, being harvested this fall or pork being sold, that's going to affect the price either up or down. But having reliable information about that future production of pork or crops or grain stored or whatever gives somebody, a producer, farmer, or rancher, an opportunity to make adjustments in their farming and ranching operation that hopefully will be the best decision for them that will affect their bottom line.
Surveys continue through June 15th. Meanwhile, due to continued dry conditions, NAS says it has asked Kansas, Oklahoma, and Texas farm operators who are selected to participate in the June Agricultural Yield Survey to update their winter wheat acreage expected to be harvested for grain. USDA says it will incorporate any changes in its June crop production report to be released on June 9th. The WTO has set a deadline for agricultural negotiations. Jonna Miller is with the American Farm Bureau Federation, and she has this report.
June is shaping up to be a very important month for World Trade Organization negotiations. The WTO has set an end-of-the-month deadline to strike a deal on cuts to farm subsidies and tariffs.
There's a lot more work to do, and pretty much it all has to get done by the end of 2006. So even though these negotiations have no good history of meeting any deadlines that have been set so far, the consequences of missing these deadlines loom larger.
American Farm Bureau trade specialist Dave Salmonson says the rush is on because trade promotion authority expires next year. That's what calls for Congress to give a simple up or down vote on trade deals without adding any amendments, which is the only way other countries agree to negotiate.
The real hang-up has been the agreement on market access, on lowering tariffs. It's the hardest issue. How much are you going to open up your agricultural economy to outside goods?
And while other countries are calling on the U.S. to make concessions, Salmonson says U.S. agricultural groups have drawn a line in the sand.
In fact, there are some people saying we have to do more on domestic support. We're certainly saying that we're not entertaining that at all until we see some movement on market access.
Jonna Miller, Washington.
USDA says it will extend the deadline for producers seeking one-time payment adjustments on EQIP contracts. The new deadline is September 1st. USDA's Natural Resources Conservation Service has issued a new strategic plan, one that features a market-based approach. NRCS Chief Bruce Knight says the plan can stretch scarce federal conservation resources.
There will never be enough federal dollars to address the nation's conservation needs, nor should there necessarily be. When there's an opportunity for the marketplace to be able to help address those concerns. And so when we're talking about a market-based approach to conservation, we're talking about the prospects of, in the future, having a sewage treatment or a water treatment plant pay a farmer to clean up the water before it comes into that water treatment plant. On the other hand, it may be a major emitter of carbon, a coal-fired electrical generation plant, paying a farmer for offsetting those same carbon emissions by putting no-till on their farm.
But Knight stressed a market approach will never fully replace federal programs. He says federal oversight led to a 43% decrease in cropland soil erosion between 1982 and 2003. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 85 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
The market for U.S. soybeans in the Western world has matured. Now, farmers, the U.S. soybean industry, and economists are looking for points of new growth. Todd Gleason has more on the potential demand for soybeans around the globe.
University of Illinois Ag economist Steve Sonkis says demand for soybeans in the Western world has matured, and it's unlikely to grow very much over the next 10 to 15 years in the way it's grown in the past. Demand for the commodity as a feedstock for vegetable oil and protein. On the other hand, he says major expansion in those same areas should come in Asia.
The other message is Asia. When we look at China, when we look at India, when we look at East Asia, Malaysia, Indonesia, large countries that have experienced income growth over the last 20 or 30 years. If that income growth continues, we're looking at major expansion at a global level, not quite doubling the need for beef, pork, poultry, aquaculture that we have today.
Sonka says the United States is just one of the big players in the global food market. The U.S. leads the world in the production of beef cattle and chicken, but follows China for pork and egg production and India for milk production. Those animals must all be fed, and Sonka says the U.S. can step up to fill those feed bunks with corn and soybeans, but only if it remains the low-cost producer of those commodities.
I think a question for U.S. agriculture is how do you become cost competitive? In this global economy, our land costs are making us a high cost, not the highest cost producer, but we're certainly not low-cost producers. How do we develop alternative farm policies that don't end up with us being a high-cost producer when we have to compete in the world where the world price is determined by economics as much or more than by policy.
The fact of the matter on the soybean front is that it costs just about the same to import beans from the United States as it does from Brazil. That goes for most ports in the world. The U.S. has the better transportation system, and that keeps cost here competitive. The Brazilians farm on much cheaper land, and that keeps them competitive. The question is which nation, which set of farmers will be able to find ways to stay the low-cost producer? China is already investing money in the Brazilian infrastructure, helping to build railways, and the governor of one Brazilian state has been known to say, "We'll pave our way out," as a reference to putting in new roads to ship soybeans to Brazilian ports. The United States is engaged in a farm bill debate centered by the George W. Bush administration on lower land costs. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural information on AM 580 is made possible with support from Lincoln Land Agri Energy in Palestine, Illinois, producing a renewable fuel with corn bought directly from the farmer. More information at 800-586-2321 or online at lincolnlandagrienergy.com.
Well, joining us now for a look at the cash grain markets is Brian Stark from the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. Good afternoon, Brian. How are you?
I'm good, Jay. How are you?
Oh, not too bad this afternoon. And we're looking at prices down a little bit from Friday. How are the bases going on these?
Basis is held fairly firm. What we've seen is a encouraging demand with the board fluctuating so much. The basis, we haven't seen it move nearly as wide as we'd anticipate. I think that's to encourage movement as we move forward in the summer. I anticipate corn and beans specifically, that as more of the old crop comes off the farm, that may widen as we move forward. Speaking from the wheat perspective, there's a good carry in the market. That's where the basis in the interior stayed strong. For facilities that have space, the river, we know, has really been weak, and I think that's encouraged bushels to look this way.
Mm-hmm. The report out this morning indicated that for the July contract, the bids for July corn, the basis 13 under futures at Decatur, and for beans 14 under, and that those seem to be some of the best around.
Yeah, I would, like I said earlier, I think that the main reason why you've seen that is to encourage movement on the cash market side as we move forward out of planting. Now that farmers are wrapping up, they're looking to get grain moved back into the pipeline, and I think once the ball starts to roll a little bit and they can encourage guys to do that, then I think the basis may widen out a little bit.
What kind of prices are farmers looking for right now?
Well, I think right now, if we can see anywhere between 240 and 250 cash old crop, I think that would entice some customers to move whatever remaining old crop they have off the farm. Mm-hmm. I think it's kind of limited. Most of the bullishness is in new crop and beyond. So the old crop's values are only as good as the new crop is going to take it. And since that's dictated by weather, I think that if we can get a nice bump up here, maybe a nickel to a dime, that a lot of guys would unload some more corn.
What do you expect for tomorrow's open?
Well, I think there may be a little bit of a sideways trade. They thought that Friday was a little bit overdone technically, and I think now that we've had some good weather forecast precip through the middle of the week in the central part of the Corn Belt, and some of the high-pressure ridge that's over Nebraska and the western part of the Corn Belt not moving as fast to the east has alleviated some of the traders' concerns. So I'd anticipate they've kind of corrected from the up side we saw on Thursday and Friday, and we'll probably be rage-bound here for the next few days ahead of the supply-demand report on Friday.
All right, and Brian, what are your prices out at the Andersons today?
238 cash corn, 255 for fall, 585 for cash beans, 605 for fall, and 368 for new crop wheat.
All right, thank you very much, sir.
You bet. Bye-bye. Right,
bye. And that was Brian Stark out at the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. Just a few minutes, we'll have the agricultural weather with the folks at Chesapeake Energy in Chicago. It's coming up on 2:30. You're listening to the Closing Market Report on WILL AM 580. I'm Jay Pierce, and joining us now with AM 580 News is Jim Meadows.
Thank you, Jay. And looking at AM 580 News, the University of Illinois trustees approved a preliminary 2007 budget today during a special teleconference meeting. The new budget is up 5.9% from 2006. The $3.7 billion spending plan includes expected increases in tuition and a new academic facility maintenance fee, as well as a 1.8% increase in state funding. A final version of the budget will be up for approval at the U of I trustees meeting in September. Former Terre Haute, Indiana Mayor P. Pete Chalos died yesterday at age 78. Chalos, a Democrat and the son of Greek immigrants, was Terre Haute's second longest-serving mayor. He was credited with improving the economic outlook of Terre Haute during the 1980s and early 90s through his economic development efforts, including uniting development groups. Six construction workers were hurt after a scaffold broke as they were putting up a grain bin today in the Christian County town of Mount Auburn. The accident happened at an ADM grain elevator complex this morning after a crane tipped and scaffolding broke. The Christian County Sheriff's Office says a section of the grain bin was being moved when the accident happened. The workers were taken to a Springfield hospital. Their identities and conditions were not immediately available. An East Central Illinois mental health agency has received a state grant allowing it to expand treatment for methamphetamine addicts. Prairie Center Health Systems is receiving a $200,000 grant, its second state grant in as many years. CEO Patrick Leary says the money will allow them to provide more extended treatment for recovering meth users and place addicts in the Champaign and Vermilion County Drug Court programs. The group mounting a legal challenge to the Indiana Toll Road lease plan says it will appeal a ruling that it must post a nearly $2 billion bond to continue the case. The appeal puts that bond on hold. The state is expected to ask the Indiana Supreme Court to take the case. Bans on smoking in bars and restaurants in Champaign and Urbana would take effect August 1st if the Urbana City Council approves its new smoke-free ordinance tonight. The Champaign City Council has already approved a ban contingent on Urbana doing the same thing. Bar owners say a smoking ban will hurt their business and send customers out of town. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Mike Morris in McHenry at 815-344-7213. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
And now it's time to take a look at agricultural weather, and joining us now is Mark Russo of Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Mark.
Good afternoon, Jay.
Well, we have beautiful weather here, and I guess throughout much of the, well, at least the Corn Belt growing area, maybe a little more rain out to the west than the eastern part, but not all that terrible.
Yeah, the overall pattern here that we're seeing with generally tranquil early summer conditions, that will be the pattern here throughout much of this week. Overall here, the Corn Belt will be in a gradually warming mode here with mostly dry conditions. There'll be a few scattered thunder showers across the northern sections of the Midwest as well as some eastern sections of the Midwest here coming up midweek. But when you add up everything here, at least between now and Saturday, we expect only around 25% of the entire Corn Belt to receive significant amounts. As for temperatures, at least the hottest temperatures are going to occur later on this week, primarily across the western Midwest, Nebraska, parts of Iowa, Missouri, where highs will exceed 90 later on this week.
Mm-hmm. Paying attention to the harvest of the hard red winter wheat area, and I guess there is a chance of some rain and harvest trying to progress despite that.
Yeah, a few scattered thunderstorms across the northern sections of the hard red belt, namely in Nebraska, some parts of northern Kansas. I don't know if any harvesting is taking place at that time as the crops are kind of wrapping up maturing across that area. So despite the fact that they've gotten some rains, not a big deal at this time. Further south in southern Kansas, down through the Texas Panhandle, the pattern is basically hot and dry here over the next week's time frame, and that should promote rapid harvesting in that area.
No, so not too bad. Anything globally that we ought to be taking a look at?
Well, we continue to monitor the situation in northeastern China. The two provinces of note, Heilongjiang and Jilin, these are very big soybean-producing areas in northeast China. They have been on the dry side here this spring and remain on the dry side for the next few days. But it looks like as we go into later on this week, it looks like that area will have a significant chance for improvement here with an upper-level wave of low pressure projected across the region. And that should produce the biggest rains of the spring, early summer across that area of northeastern China.
Mm-hmm. One more area back stateside, down in the Delta in the southeast. I guess they're getting some fairly timely showers down there.
Mainly in the southeastern portion of the country. In the Delta growing region, though, there's been some spotty rain activity here and there, but in general, they've been in a general declining mode from a soil moisture standpoint and from a precipitation standpoint. That looks to continue here as we go through this week and on into next week, so that's just something to keep an eye on here as we go into the middle portion of June. The dryness here, or the evolving dryness, is not any kind of big issue now, but certainly they like expect to receive more significant rain later on this month.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you much, Mark.
You're welcome, Jay.
Mark Russo, Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois, on the closing market report today. That is the report for this Monday, June the 5th. Todd Gleason returns tomorrow. I'm Jay Pierce. Remember, you can hear today's futures analysis, cash grain report, and the weather on the web. Go to willag.org.
It's 2:37 Central Time. You're tuned to the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580. You'll also find us online at WILL.UIUC.edu. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Let's check in now with Bill Burnside of William C. Burnside & Company in Danville. Bill, what's happening today on Wall Street?
Well, Celeste, the stocks have begun to stabilize somewhat after probing last week's lows, but they still remain very weak across the board. Of all the 10 sectors trading lower, energy and materials are facing away with declines of more than 2%. The influential technology, healthcare, and industrial sectors are posting losses of at least 1%. And it's worth noting that the below average volume lends less conviction behind today's broad-based dubbing of the market. The Dow is down 169 points at 11,078. The NASDAQ is down 43.64 at 21.75. The S&P 500 down 19.30.